Does being ill and gay preclude your being bought dinner, however? It will be a pleasure. They found Sally with a bunch of trolls and a few people dressed in what struck Jensen as a peculiar style, even for colonial folk. Kind of alternate 18th century. Sally herself wore her usual sleeveless travel jacket, as if she were about to leave any second for another urgent stepwise jaunt. More introductions followed, and Jensen was able to match more names to faces. The oddly dressed types were from Happy Landings. A slim, shy-looking youngish man turned out to be Jacques Montcut, headmaster of a school at Valhalla. A teenage girl, sober and serious, standing quietly at Montcut's side, was Roberta Golding, a student at the Valhalla High School who had made the news, along with Montcut, by travelling with the Chinese expedition to Earth East 20 million. They were here as guests of Joshua, it turned out. Dan Valiente would be starting at Montcute School from next year. The Happy Landings folk seemed to stand a little way away from the rest, as if not quite part of the crowd. There was something particularly odd about Roberta Golding. A watchfulness, a stillness, that Jensen hadn't seen in such a young person since Joshua himself was that age. But she didn't detect Joshua's eerie calm about Roberta, nor his irreducible survival instinct. She had a look that Jensen, in her duty days, had associated with kids from damaged families. She had seen too much, too young. Jensen wondered uneasily what this flawed child might become in future. The trolls included Mary the runaway, and there was no mistaking the cub, Ham, who even now still wore bits of his silvery spacesuit. As soon as Ham saw Jensen, he ran straight at her, making to hug her legs, and would have knocked Jensen clean over if Joshua hadn't intercepted him first. Sally, being Sally, immediately homed in on Frank Wood.
"Well, well, Buzz Aldrin, what do you want?"
Wood nodded graciously enough. "I was hoping for a burger and a beer." Sally spat.
"Enough with the right stuff crap. You don't charm me. More trouble of the gap, right?"
"Not at all. I came to thank you, Miss Lindsay, and you, Lieutenant Jensen, for dealing with that business with the trolls the way you did. My colleagues up there are not bad people, but they are somewhat driven. I think we'd lost our moral bearings. Your actions helped us find them again." He grinned. "And now, on to the stars. We're already talking about probes to Mars, even a manned jaunt, and some neat visuals."
He began to speak of something called a planetary alignment, occurring this very day. Lots of Earth's sister worlds were lining up in one part of the sky. Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, even the crescent moon.
"Of course, it's visible from all the worlds of the long Earth, but we're taking the opportunity to throw over probes to get decent images, to showcase the possibilities of the gap, you see."
Joshua said, "You'll probably scare everybody to death. Aren't they saying this lineup is astrologically ominous?"
Helen pulled his sleeve. "Don't tease the man." Sally snorted.
"But it's not as good from the gap. You haven't got a moon."
"In the way," Frank said smoothly, good-humored. "We don't have a moon in the way. All the better for seeing the real spectacle."
The noise, the clamor, became too much for Jensen all at once. The words being spoken around her seemed to dissolve into a jabber. She dropped her head and put her hands to her ears. Frank Wood put an arm around her shoulders.
"Here, let's get you out of this."
Agnes was immediately at her side too. She smiled into Jensen's face, took her arm, nodded to sisters Georgina and John, and walked her and Frank away from the clamour.
"Come on," Agnes said. "Let's get some air. Then I'll call you a buggy. We have golf carts here, and get you back to your summer house for a break. How's that?"
"You're very kind. I remember how it was to be ill, frankly. Lobsang didn't clean that out of my head, at least."
They were heading towards the greater band of trolls down by the river. As they went about their business, eating, grooming, splashing in the water, flickering between the worlds, the trolls sang another gentle melody. A few humans stood by, clapping along, trying to join in. Despite all the people present, Jensen felt a kind of peace emanating from the contented troll band.
That's another lovely song.
Agnes squeezed her arm.
All my trials. Outside of the Steinman canon, one of my own favorites since childhood.
Oh, yes. And how appropriate for me.
Soon be over.
Agnes squeezed her arm.
That's enough of that.
They had come to a bluff of higher ground, a shallow rise which Jansen climbed painfully, and here they paused. They looked out over the unspoiled lakes of this world, the sun hanging calmly in the blue sky, the young, still small city rising on the isthmus, a ghost of Datum Madison.
Agnes said, I used to come up here when I was ill. Look at all this, the wider world that frames us all. The heavens governed by their own eternal laws. The same on every world. Like Frank's alignment of planets, right? And the simple things, the play of sunlight on water, a universal across the long earth. That's where I found solace, Monica.
But when you've been out there, it all seems so fragile, Jansen said. Contingent. It might not have been this way. It might not be this way tomorrow.
Yes, Agnes said thoughtfully. And being close to Lobsang, well, I feel I see the world through his eyes to some extent. The way he regards people, even his closest associates and friends, Joshua, Sally, that nice cleric, Nelson Azikiwe, no doubt others, even me. He calls us valuable long-term investments. I sometimes think he, or maybe his paymaster Douglas Black, is positioning us all like pieces on a chessboard, ready for the game to begin.
But what is the game?
No doubt we'll find out. Now, where's that buggy?
There was a commotion behind them, raised voices. Reluctantly, Jansen, Agnes, and Frank turned to look. An airship had materialized, right above Lobsang's position. Lobsang himself seemed to freeze. No, Jansen thought. He had gone from his ambulant unit, gone in an instant. She could tell from his posture. All around the grassy sward, people's phones started to chime and were pulled from pockets and purses. Soon the stepping started, people being simply deleted from the scene. And Jansen heard two words on all their lips. The first, Yellowstone. The second, Datum. Frank said grimly,
Maybe Joshua was right about the planet alignment.
Chapter 69 Jansen insisted on being taken back to Madison West 5, no matter what pills she had to force down her throat to withstand the nausea. And once back at 5, she demanded to be taken not to the convalescent home where she had been staying, but to the new city's central police station. The current chief, Mike Christopher, had been a junior officer in Jansen's time. He recognized her, let her in, and told her to sit tight in a corner of one of the offices.
We're on alert, Spooky. There are already trickles of refugees showing up here. I mean in the Datum City.
Jansen gripped Frank's hand.
Refugees, Mike? In Madison? How far is Madison from Yellowstone?
Mike shrugged.
Over 1,000 miles, I guess.
We're talking about an eruption. It must be an eruption, right? Will the effects of this really reach that far?
He had no reply. As she sat with Sister John and Frank went to find coffee, Jansen tried to take in the images unfolding across the screens that plastered the walls of this office. Images taken from civilian news, police, military sources. Images gathered on the ground, and from planes and twains, copters and satellites. All of them images from Datum Earth, downloaded onto memory chips and then hastily transferred by hand through the walls between the worlds, and retransmitted with only a slight delay. After false alarms across the low Earths, there had indeed been a significant eruption in the Yellowstone footprint, and it had been at Datum Yellowstone itself, she soon learned. It had begun about 1 p.m, Madison time. The evacuation of the park had been going on since just before the eruption. About an hour later, the great tower of ash and gas had started to collapse all around the vent, a mass of superheated rock fragments and gases washing across the Yellowstone ground as fast as a jet airliner, smashing, flash burning, crushing, As excited geologists talked, unwelcome records started to tumble. This was already a worse eruption than Pinatubo, Krakatoa, Tambora. Sleep seemed to be rising in Jansen's head, like her own pod of deep, hot magma. She couldn't take in the words anymore, the images, and those damn pills didn't seem to be helping with the pain. She quickly lost track of time. At one point, she was faintly aware of a kind of conference going on over her head, involving Mike, the sisters, Frank Wood, and somebody who had the air of a doctor, though she didn't know him. She gathered that they'd decided to move her, over her feeble protests, into a room at Agnes's home for a couple of days. Mike Christopher organized this briskly, a wheelchair, an ambulance. He winked at her.
You get an astronaut to hold your hand, Spooky.
She pulled her tongue at him. And still, the bad news came. Even before she was taken out of the police station, new images were filling the wall screens, the tablets, the glowing smartphones. A second eruption vent had opened up, and then a third. By the time they got her out of there, Yellowstone, imaged by brave USAF pilots in fast aircraft, looked like Dante's hell. The next time she woke, she was in a cozy but unfamiliar room, attended by Sister John. With brisk compassion, the sister helped her to the bathroom and brought her breakfast in bed. She was in an adjustable bed, she discovered, like the one she'd been using in her convalescent home. There was a drip stand alongside, and her medications on a shelf by the door. Everything looked to have been moved over from the convalescent home. She felt a warm surge of gratitude for this kindness. Then Sister John showed in yet another doctor. He tried to talk to her about the nature of her care, palliative only, and so forth. She waved that away and asked him about the news.
No TV before meds, he said sternly,
as he began to treat her. Only after he'd gone was Frank Wood allowed in, who looked like he'd been sleeping in his suit. Then at last they turned on the TV. The whole caldera was opened up now. The towering cloud it produced was tall enough to be seen from as far away as Denver or Salt Lake City, as evidenced by shaky handheld camera footage from those places. But the images were strange. A yellow-brown light, a shrunken sun, like daylight on Mars, Frank Wood suggested. By now, that cloud of ash and gas and lumps of pumice was spreading fast and far through the high air. Cars wouldn't drive far before their filters clogged, and so there were eerie shots of freeways full of shuffling people, their faces and eyes swathed in cloth, tramping through the grey snow-like fall like starving Russian peasants, all heading away from Yellowstone. But of course most people, whoever could, were heeding the systematic calls to step away. And shots from the air, taken from Earth West and East 123, showed the new communities in the footprints of the threatened datum cities being swamped by a mass of people stepping over, people unconsciously forming up in blocks and streets, in the forms of the schools and hospitals and shopping malls and churches from which they had come, a human map of the doomed communities just a step or two away. All this was horribly familiar to Jansen. She murmured, clutching Frank's strong hand.
I remember trying to persuade my chief.
Oh, dear.
Oh, Jack Clichy.
We have to get people to step, sir, anywhere, east or west, just away from Madison Zero.
You know as well as I do that not everybody can step. Aside from the phobics, there are the old, kids, bedridden, hospital patients.
So people help each other. If you can step, do it. But take someone with you, someone who can't step.
Frank just held her hand. She heard the sisters talking of Joshua Valiente, Sally Lindsay, others, rushing to the datum to help with the relief effort. The name snagged her attention before she sank back into deeper sleep. When she woke again, Sister John was quietly weeping.
They're saying it's our fault. Humanity's. The scientists. All the local versions of Yellowstone have been unstable recently, but it's only on the datum that this has happened.
humans disturbing the earth, like we did the climate. Others are saying it's a punishment from God. Well, it's not that, she said fiercely. Not my God. But how will we cope with this? By now, Jansen was too feeble to get up. Damn morphine, she thought. Sister John had to help her with the bedpans. She was peripherally aware of a nurse in the background, from the convalescent home. Jansen didn't know his name. But he let Sister John take the lead. That struck her as polite. And when she woke with a little more clarity, here was Frank Wood, still sitting at her side.
Hey, she said.
Hey.
What time is it?
The time? He checked his watch, a big astronaut-type Rolex, then did a double take. 3 days since the first eruption started. It's morning, Monica.
You need a clean shirt.
He grinned and rubbed his chin.
This is an all-female establishment, as far as adults are concerned. Don't ask me what I used to shave today.
Of course, there was a TV on, the sound soft, in a corner of the room. The projections were fast changing. As the tremendous cloud of ash and dust spread across the continental U.S., even into Canada and Mexico, people were stepping away in their millions, an emigration greater than any in human history before or after Step Day. Meanwhile, the effects of the cloud were already global. Shots of towering sunsets over London and Tokyo. It was very strange to watch this, Monica thought, from a world 5 steps removed, in West 5, where the sun was shining. Or not, she realized vaguely. Once again, it was night. As if she was watching a snow globe, roughly shaken. Or an ash globe. She felt too weak to move. Only her head. She had an oxygen tube in her nose now, an automated meds dispenser by her bed, like a prop from ER. She drifted helplessly back towards sleep.
"Carry them in your arms, on your back,"
she'd told Clichy.
"Then go back and step again, and again, and again."
"You've thought about this, haven't you, Spooky?"
she murmured.
"It's why you gave me the job all those years ago, Jack."
Frank leaned close.
"What was that, honey?"
But Monica seemed to be sleeping again. On the 7th day, at last, the eruption finished. No more fresh ash, to global relief. But it ended with a clash of cymbals as Frank Wood, sleepless, grimy, watched on the room's wall TV. The caldera, 50 miles wide, emptied of magma, just collapsed. It was as if a chunk of real estate the size of a small state had just been dropped 1,000 feet. Some of the younger sisters, excited, went stepping over into ash-coated Datum Madison to witness the consequences firsthand. After just 5 minutes, the quakes came, a ground-shaking pulse of energy traveling around the planet, though in the ruins of Madison there was only rubble to disturb. Then, after an hour or more, the sound, like a tremendous artillery barrage just over the horizon, or like the launch of a space shuttle, Frank Wood thought, digging back into his boyhood memories.
"My God," Frank said, and he felt for Jansen's hand. "What is to become of us, Monica?" "Monica?"
Her hand was very cold. This is Michael Fenton Stevens. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged recording of The Long War by Terry Pratchett and Stephen Baxter. This program was produced by Random House Audiobooks. The director was Garrick Hagen. Executive producer, Caitlin Garing. Text copyright 2013 by Terry Pratchett and Lynn Pratchett and Stephen Baxter. Production copyright 2013 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.